Irreverent. Entertaining. Cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
Listening to Sam in the Morning with Jen, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Good morning, welcome to the show. Today is Friday, January 9th, and we're ready for the weekend. I don't know about you, but I am.
I am. Well, I know you are.
I'm a person who loves weekends.
You're a weekend warrior.
I am. You know, when I first started the station, I would wait for Monday, you know, because I was like so, like, stoked and everything, you know, and I was like full of energy and a lot of dreams and desires and ambitions. And the weekend seemed too slow for me. I needed Monday so I can get busy.
Yeah.
When people are at work. But that's in the past.
Yeah, now you want to be not busy.
Now I want to be not busy. Yeah. I do. I am thinking of a vacation, so we'll see. We'll have to announce something soon.
Yeah.
I can't keep talking about it all the time.
I believe it when I see it.
Yeah, exactly. Well, okay, so today is cool. We're going to have a guest on the phone.
I can't wait.
I know. And you wrote me, and I wrote you back. You said my favorite topic, and I wrote you figures.
Yep.
And I didn't know if you would take it like lightly or not, you know, because it was supposed to be a joke.
Yeah.
Okay. Did you take it as such? Good. Because I figured at this point we're at a point in the relationship where we can kid with each other, right?
Yes.
Okay, and you can understand and not take it seriously.
Exactly.
Yeah. No, I mean, I just said because I would hope that it would interest you, you know? I mean, relationships are always interesting.
I'm fascinated by them.
Yeah. So this book is going to be, is called The Naked Truth About Men and Romance, and we're going to talk to the author, Catherine Foster, in a few minutes. And I'd like to read this too, because she says that sometimes women have to figure out what happened to the man they married.
Yeah.
I can say what happened to the woman I married too, but, you know, or like in general, not me.
Right.
But a man can say that. And
there are two sides to every story.
Yeah, because it does happen. People do change and they grow apart, you know.
Yes.
And, I've seen it. I've seen it many times before, you know. And but then, you know, some people, like, I met this guy yesterday who says his parents are celebrating 50 years of marriage. And I'm like, wow, you know, I mean, obviously these are like soulmates, you know.
Right. And they make it work.
Yeah.
However they've figured it out. I mean, those are the people that should be writing books too.
Yeah, exactly.
How do you make a marriage last that long?
Yeah. Well, yeah, you know, I mean, it does take hard work, but I think also, you know, if you're like soulmates, you'll work through everything, you know.
Yeah.
And that's why sometimes I say, you know, if your relationship is not working out, just let it go, because that person might not be your soulmate. You might have to release them so they can find the right one and you can find the right one.
Right. I don't know that I believe in soulmates, but I definitely believe in, you know, there are certain people that you should be with and certain people you shouldn't.
Yeah.
And also the amount of effort you put in and also the timing of when you meet them and what you're dealing with in your own life, I think plays into it so much.
I think the biggest part is really what you guys go through during the marriage, you know, because people can change. I mean, you know, you can figure, okay, I'll work hard on this and stuff. But then, you know, during the marriage, maybe you grow apart, you know, you get distant from each other. And things like that. So, you know, I don't know. I mean, I do think hard work can help a relationship. But I also think it shouldn't be hard work if you meet the right person.
That's true.
You know what I'm saying?
Well, why do people get married if it's not the right person?
Because they don't know it's not the right person.
Maybe they need to figure it out first.
Yeah, I know. I mean, I married the first time for the wrong reason, I think. I was 27, and there was just a lot of pressure from the family and stuff. So, you know, so I got married, but we obviously were not right for each other, you know. And I think I knew that early on, but, you know, what are you going to do? At least we had two beautiful kids together, and that's all that matters. So I don't badmouth anybody or anything. I'm just saying, you know, sometimes you don't marry the right person. Sometimes it seems right at the time, and then, you know, you grow apart, you realize, hey, you know, we've become different people.
Right.
you know, from the time you marry them, whether it's appearance or mentally, emotionally, you know, people change.
It's true.
And they start cheating on each other and stuff, and that's like, that's terrible.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Scary.
Yeah, I know. I know. That's why it's, you know, I mean, you really have to be picky in who you choose. And I guess that's why some people spend a lot of money on matchmakers.
That's true.
So they can find someone for them, you know.
Or then there's the people on the other side that, like, are still waiting to find their person, but they're, like, aging.
Yeah.
And they're, like, in their 40s, never married.
Right.
Still a bachelor, basically. And it's like,
yeah.
What are you waiting for?
Exactly. You've waited too long.
You're waiting for like a unicorn at this point.
Yeah. I mean, it's hard. It's harder finding people as you get older, you know, because, you know, when you're young, you hang out a lot, you know, you go out a lot. So you meet people, you know, as you grow older and stuff, you don't do that as much. So it gets harder to meet people.
Yep.
And yeah. So, you know, people go to Tinder and all these other things.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's a new one called Happn. And it basically, you have it running in your phone, and it picks up all the people that also have the app that pass by you. And your phone alerts you, like, you pass by the following six people. Do you want to like them? And if you like them and they like you, it opens a chat. So, like, you might not even see the person, or you might make eye contact with them but never talk to them, and then go by. And then you could find them later.
Wow.
Yeah.
I like that.
That one I actually kind of like, because you've seen them or like been in their vicinity.
Yeah.
It's not like Tinder where it's just completely random and you're scrolling through faces.
Right. Yeah. God, all these apps, man. I mean, my God, you know, who thinks about all this stuff?
I don't know, but I think it, I'm glad that they're doing it, because one of them is going to end up being the right app.
Yeah.
I don't believe in all of them, but I think they're getting closer to what makes more sense.
Yeah. I know. I mean, they're like talking about this this app that helps women with birth control. And it's called, let's see, what's it called? Kindara, whatever that is. That's the name of the app. And I guess this is for women who don't want to go on birth control.
Mm-hmm.
So they use that as birth control. In other words, they track when they ovulate and everything, their body temperature and all these things. So these are women that don't want to take pills or anything, you know. So
interesting.
Yeah. So this app, I guess, kind of like, you know, you give it the temperature and everything, and when you ovulate, and then, so you know. But they're saying obviously it's not very safe, because it's kind of complicated to figure it out.
Right. I mean.
Yeah.
We're no doctors.
Yeah, I know. But they're saying about 1-3% only of women use it as a form of contraception.
That's not a big percentage.
No, no. But then, you know, I mean, some people do that. So, yeah. So I guess, you know, they want to stay away from pills. I don't know, but what's wrong with, like, IUD and stuff? That's fine. That's not hormonal.
I mean, that
anything,
scares me,
right?
Just because it's like a object that's put
inside of you.
And a lot of times it can do some serious damage too.
I know. Except they've been using it for decades, you know, so I'm sure they're a lot safer. But man, I remember, maybe this is too much information, but I remember when I was with a girl that had one, I could feel it. Yeah. You know, like at the end.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
that's,
you could
a lot
feel
of information.
It. Yeah. It is, right?
Yep.
The depth of humanity.
Yep.
But yeah, that's funny. So so there you go. We're talking about apps and stuff, you know.
Yeah.
But we'll see. You know, I mean, we'll see what happens.
Yep.
So let's see. What's going on today? They killed the two suspects in France.
Yeah.
I guess. So I don't think anybody kidded themselves they're going to catch them alive.
No, and it's frustrating, too, because they want to die as martyrs. And, like, we keep mentioning their names and talking about them, and that was the whole point of what they wanted to do. First of all, you're not a martyr if you kill people. Sorry.
Right.
If you save people, maybe, but killing them is the opposite. So they should maybe look up what that means. But they died, and that's unfortunate, because we could have, like, put them on trial and all kinds of things. And, I mean, not that I believe in torture, but, like, made it a little less comfortable for them.
Yeah.
Then just they got their end.
Right.
And now their names are in the news.
Right. But they're going to hell probably, so who cares? Yeah. You know, I mean, that's the thing is that you wonder how can religion justify that God wants you to kill people?
There was an interview on NPR this morning with a guy from France. He's in charge of one of the townships there, and he's Muslim. And he was like, the interviewer on NPR was saying, like, can you condemn these people? Like, and he's like, it's not for me to say anything about. I'm not judging them as fellow like Islamics. I'm judging them as extremists.
Right.
And I can do that separately from my religion because they clearly are not my religion. What they are is something completely fanatical.
Mm.
And his point was very interesting. He's like, I've talked to the people at Charlie Hebdo and said, like, you can't talk about the prophet. You just can't.
Right.
You can say anything else. But that is something that will get you some serious consequences, not because I think it's right for them to do that, but because they're fanatical.
Yeah.
And so he warned them, and they still did it. And she asked him, like, well, do you agree with their right to do whatever they wanted there? And he said, I absolutely do. It's free speech.
Right.
However, but it's not the smartest thing to do.
These are going to be the consequences.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, you know, he's right. You know, I mean, these are extremists. They may be interpreting the Quran the way they want to.
Right.
And they do that. But there seem to be a lot of them, man.
Yep.
There sure are a lot of them. You don't see this kind of number of terrorists coming from other religions, at least not this lifetime.
No.
You know, so you have to wonder what's going on there.
I mean, there are definitely hate groups out there. We have a lot of them here on our land.
Yeah, we do.
It's nothing like that.
No. Je suis Charlie.
Yeah.
Yeah. So there was a cartoon on Facebook of Muhammad screwing Fidel Castro. And it says Muhammad infidel. Do you get that?
Yeah.
Infidel.
Yeah. There have been a lot of good ones lately. A lot.
Oh, man. That's one thing about Americans. We know how to make fun out of everything, man.
I mean, even the French are.
Yeah.
Everyone's making fun of everything at this point, but in like a somber way, because it's to highlight, you know, the catastrophic point that this was absurd. It's over cartoonists.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, and it's over people's opinions. And that's what worries me is that, you know, they always try to silence voices and stuff. And, you know, that's what happens.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, you know, what are you going to do? Let's see. What else is going on? You got to hear this. I mean, this woman, I guess in Boston, didn't know that she was pregnant until she gave birth. At least that's what she claims.
How does that even happen?
I
feel like that might happen to me.
Really?
Yeah, maybe.
How is that going to happen?
I don't know, because when I have a stomachache, I ignore it. And like, usually I'm like, I'm fine. I'll just drink some water.
Yeah, but then you get to your ninth month. Come on. I mean,
right. You're not just fat. You're pregnant.
Right. So that's the thing, though, is that it wouldn't happen to you because you're not fat. They're saying usually, you know, if the woman is like overweight and she's got like a irregular period and stuff, they don't really realize that they are. You know, I just, it's hard for me to imagine.
Yeah.
It's hard for me to imagine. She's probably, I mean, she can say whatever she wants, you know, but yeah, you know, they're saying that her mother didn't even know anything was happening either. And she lives with her.
Yeah.
Wow.
Weird. People are so strange.
I know. You know, I mean, how is this possible?
I don't know. But I'd rather this kind of story in the news than, you know, the other ones.
Yeah.
This is kind of silly.
Yeah. Well, they're not saying they're saying it's not the first time, you know.
No, I mean, I've heard of this in the past.
Yeah.
That, like, people give birth to a baby in a toilet, and it's like, what?
Yeah, no, in the toilet and stuff. But I think that they know they're pregnant. They're just doing this as a self-abortion or something, you know.
So weird.
Yeah, I know. And because I think pregnancy has a lot more signs than just that, you know. They're saying, well, you know, when you question how come she doesn't feel the baby, they're saying that sometimes, you know, it depends on the baby's position in the placenta or stuff to feel it.
Also, if the baby kicks, she could think it's like cramps.
Yeah.
Or that she has gas or something.
Yeah, gas. That's what they're saying. Some women think they have gas. Because they're saying, you know, with the first pregnancy, you don't really know what you're feeling. You don't know what to expect. So, you know, if you don't think about it. But, I mean, wouldn't it occur to you at a certain point to say, maybe I'm pregnant?
Right.
I mean, because women ask that even when they're not pregnant.
It's
you know?
True. Like we're on high alert most of the time.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, even if you're not, even if there's not even a chance, you're like, is there an immaculate conception that has happened inside my stomach? Or my uterus, I guess, whatever.
Yeah. Gotta be careful what you let in there, man, because.
Yikes.
You gotta pay the consequences, you know?
Man.
Yeah. What else is going on, man? I mean, there's a lot of stuff going on.
There's
I'm
a lot of stuff.
Just trying to figure out what's going on in my life.
I know that I need a cup of coffee.
Do you?
I do. I didn't have one this morning.
Oh, wow. I should have brought my machine with me.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I'm having a party with that machine. Let me tell you, that espresso machine I have.
Yeah.
I'm having a blast with it. I mean, you know, it makes such good foam that, you know, usually when you drink cappuccino, you drink the foam too. But here there's so much that it just stays in the cup, you know.
That's good.
Yeah. Well, whatever, you know, but... But that's the way cappuccino should be, you know. It's not like a lot of milk. If you put a lot of milk, it becomes a latte.
Right.
So cappuccino is like coffee and mostly foamed.
Yeah.
It's supposed to be really light, you know. So when you go to Starbucks, if you order a cappuccino and it's too heavy, you know they did it the wrong way.
Right. That makes sense.
And some people don't know how to make it.
I definitely don't.
Yeah. Well, when you have a machine, it does
right.
it for you.
I have skill. I have other skills.
Yeah.
The Golden Globes are this weekend.
Oh, really?
Yeah, are you going to watch?
Oh. Well, now that you told me, maybe I will. I usually don't watch award shows. I just have them running in the background.
Yeah.
And then every time I pass by the TV, I see something.
Well, you missed the People's Choice Awards, so maybe you should watch this.
That's true, huh?
Yeah.
But the Golden Globes is only for movies, right?
And I think
and
TV
the People's Choice. Oh, okay. Well, maybe TV as well, yeah. But not,
I'm not
music
sure.
or anything.
I think that it's not just movies. I think Oscars are just movies.
Yeah. Okay. Well, our guest is calling in, so let's go ahead and take this. Good morning. You're on the air. Go ahead. Catherine?
Yes.
Yes, Catherine Foster. Welcome to the show. Thank you for calling in.
Thank you. Thank you. Yes.
Of course. Where are you calling us from this morning?
I'm talking about the naked truths about men and romance.
No, I know. I know. But where are you calling us from today?
I am calling you from Fort Worth, Texas.
Oh, Fort Worth, Texas. Okay, cool. I've never been. But that's next to Dallas, right? Dallas-Fort Worth.
Yes, it is.
Yeah, I know
it
the
is,
airport.
But it's a,
yeah.
It's a very cool city in and of itself.
Really?
Did
you grow up there or did you move there from somewhere else?
I grew up in Seattle.
Oh, wow. So that's quite a change, huh?
Mm-hmm. It is. Yes, indeed.
What attracted you to Fort Worth, Texas, out of all places?
Job changes.
Oh, I see. Okay. So, because usually, yeah. I mean, I don't think the first choice that people have is, I'm going to move to Fort Worth, you know? So, yeah.
I hear you on that.
Yeah.
Especially when you live by the ocean.
Absolutely. You know, I mean, Seattle is beautiful. So you wrote a book. Have you been a writer for very long?
Yeah, about 3 years. Yeah, I've written 5 other books.
Oh, wow.
5 books? Wow. So that's in 3 years?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
5 books in 3 years. That's not bad. You've been pretty productive.
Yes. I got on the trend.
Yeah. So how did you get, I mean, are all your books about relationships?
3 of them are. 2 of them are novels.
I see. Oh, okay, cool.
But the novels are psychologically oriented, you know. One is called Sessions, Memoirs of a Psychotherapist.
Oh, interesting.
Oh, wow. So
yeah,
so
yeah. That goes through different people's journey in psychotherapy.
So I take it you've been a psychotherapist for a while.
Yeah, I have 27 years.
Oh, wow. So you have a lot of stories. You have a lot of stories to tell.
Oh, gosh, absolutely.
How did you get into that profession, Catherine?
How did I get into it?
Yeah.
You know, when I was 13, I somehow knew that that's what I would do.
Wow.
And I never veered from that, really. I was a minister for a while, but I always knew that wasn't really what I was going to be doing.
Oh, wow. That's very interesting.
Yeah.
But it's still the business of helping people, so that's not too far off. Yeah.
Well, it's not too far off. Yeah. You're right.
Very interesting. So let's talk about your new book. It's called The Naked Truth About Men and Romance. Psychologist yeah. appeals to women to transform their approach to romance. Now, so transform their approach. What is the approach that they need to transform? I mean, what are women doing wrong?
It's not exactly what they're doing wrong. It's just how they think. You know, the deal is that all of us, when we're close to somebody, we project ourselves onto them. We expect the same kind of stuff. And women believe that men want to establish an intimate relationship in the same way they would do it. But that isn't how it pans out. And really, when the genders come together, fueled by sexual impulses in adolescence, they don't understand each other very well. And they honestly have very different brain structure and hormones going on. So their agendas are different.
Right.
What I am really concerned about is that women spend a lot of time and effort and go through disappointment and aggravation and self-doubt basically because they don't really know the neuroscience between the gender differences. I think if they did, it would change things.
Right.
And my other big deal here is that never before have women been so positioned to change the world. The female brain equips women with gifts and values that are really essential for right now, like tolerance and egalitarianism and relationship warmth and empathy. And all these gifts could be applied to anything from caretaking the environment to finding a new way of politicking.
Yeah.
Carl Jung, the great psychiatrist, believed the only way to save Western man was to restore feminine values. But I believe that until women loosen their expectations of male romantic partners, they will continue devoting themselves to trying to change men.
Right. And, you know, it's true. All men can think about is war and fighting and violence, you know. And you bring a woman in and it's a whole different thing, you know. And that's why I'm looking forward to a woman president. You know, I'd really like to see how a female would be able to run the country. You know,
I would like to see that first. I think that first what we're going to see though is, you know, when you take femininity, it's on a continuum, and you have women who are their brains function a little bit more like men, you know, and then you have more feminine type women. And I think what we're going to get first are the more masculinized type women, and then eventually they will pave the way for real change that will come from women who are highly feminine.
Oh, wow. Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, there's different degrees of femininity is what you're saying.
Yes, there are.
Right.
Yeah, as is true with masculinity as well.
Right.
But you're so right. You know, we started as hunter-gatherers, and I know we hear that idea, but to really digest that powerful idea and apply it to your personal romance is a whole different thing because, you know, men develop as silent stalkers of prey. They use language in staccato, factual ways. They didn't develop language in the way women did, nor did they hook up feelings and words the way women do. So they, you know, they toughen themselves emotionally to be able to kill Bambi, you know, and do battle. And a man had to lay empathy aside to butcher animals. We know this because there's still like 179 hunter-gatherer societies in the world, and we can look at them and see that it's overwhelmingly the guy's job to do the hunting and the warring, you know?
Right.
But when men did all that, their testosterone spiked sharply. And so today, men's testosterone is 10 to 20 times higher than is a woman's.
Oh, wow.
And as meanwhile, you know, as a female was nurturing children, her testosterone remained less developed, and her estrogen and oxytocin got high. It was important that her sex drive wasn't too high because she needed a high-touch but non-sexual relationship with her children to stimulate their brain growth. It's essential. So today, men are 4 times more likely than a woman to see sex and emotional closeness as the same thing. And women see sex and emotional closeness as two separate things, and she believes it's a separate task to develop emotional closeness.
Right.
And so in her role, her oxytocin went high. And oxytocin is that thing that makes you emotionally sensitive and generous and self-sacrificing, while testosterone paves the way for a person to have a strong self-orientation.
Right. Well, you know, I mean, that makes sense because, you know, I mean, obviously women and men approach sexuality and romance differently. Mm-hmm. And your mm-hmm. explanation is fascinating, you know, because I guess, you know, we can trace pretty much everything back to the caveman days.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, you kind of can, because 99.9% of our history was spent that way. So
right.
it's that's how and when our brains developed. So
right.
we're living with that now.
Right. Now, you talk about blaming and everything. Talk a little bit about that. I mean, because obviously, you know, and I've been guilty of this also, is people tend to blame each other for their problems. And nobody wants to take responsibility.
The deal is that anytime we blame anything, anybody for anything, we get a lift, an emotional lift. And some people are sort of addicted to that. You know, if they put it off from themselves, they feel better. But in the male-female relationship, you know, if you're a chicken and the guy's a cow, but you keep believing he's a chicken, you're going to get really mad that he doesn't cluck right.
Right.
But if you start getting and you accept that he's really a cow, you expect different things, and you can apply, a woman can apply her empathy and patience, and women have a lot of those two things, especially if you know the science behind the difference.
Yeah.
So yeah, blaming gets us nowhere. I really think that women have to educate themselves about the neuroscience. They have to adjust their expectations and then structure and broaden their lives to get their own needs met. You know, we all have to be our own best friend and see it to it that our needs are met and be in charge of our own well-being and never put our well-being in the hands of anybody, you know.
Yeah.
And fourth, she has to drop waiting for him to change and sitting around in angst and getting disappointed. He's much more able to love, as I'm sure you can attest, when he's not being criticized.
Right. No, absolutely.
And then she has to focus on what she can expect from him, you know.
Yeah. What are reasonable expectations and unreasonable expectations?
Yeah, you know, research has shown that unmet expectations make us lonely. And we know that, you know, we all know the divorce is high. The divorce rate is high, right? But what most people don't realize is that 2/3 of divorces are initiated by women. It's women who are unhappy. Their expectations are not being met. They get lonely, so then they figure, well, this doesn't work, I'll get a divorce. But that's not really a workable, ongoing plan for society is to keep doing this, you know?
Yeah.
I think we have to do something different.
That's true, yeah. And, you know, I mean, it's also because I think, you know, in the past, people had defined roles, you know, the women and the men did. I think today people expect their spouse to be everything, their mother and their father and their sister
mm-hmm.
and their lover and friend,
true.
Right?
And the truth is that women talk really, I mean, if we just take the basics of talk, women talk really different than men do. And the reason is that when, by the time a girl is 17 years old, she has had a profound change. We know from sophisticated MRIs now that if you look at the brains of a 7-year-old boy and a 7-year-old girl, they handle negative emotion in the amygdala, which is a part of the brain that hasn't changed much from the beginning of time. So if you ask these kids what they're feeling, they can't really explain it. But by the time a girl is 17, she has had a transformation. And the processing of her emotion has moved out of that primitive part and moved into the cerebral cortex, where higher mental functioning happens, you know, like reflection and putting words to feelings and being able to reason things out. So she can now easily tell you what she feels and why she feels what she feels. She can hook up words to feelings, and she can reason through emotion. Her emotional intelligence has taken this giant leap. However, negative emotion remains in the primitive brain of males forever. So that asking a 7-year-old boy and a 57-year-old man why he's sad or mad, you're probably going to get some version of I don't know.
Right.
So this is why women, I mean, we've always sort of known this, but now we know the neuroscience. This is why women have to talk to women, because they can have this fluid exchange filled with nuances, you know?
Right.
And I joked with guys in therapy that they need to tattoo on one wrist, you're the most important person in my life. I want to know how you feel. And then on the other wrist, he needs to tattoo, tell me more about how you feel. Because we know that women, this is because of menstruation, really, you know, women have access to 412 mutually exclusive and separate emotions. And so women want to share. You know, they want it. This is women. I mean, this is their identity. This is what they feel. This is who they are. They want to talk about their feelings.
Right.
And, you know, this is what makes them. So, but men and women talk very differently.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
So that's, in coupling, that's a lot of what happens, is she goes to share something. Right?
And
we're talking about in the emotional, one of her 412 emotions, right? And he doesn't know that that's going to happen. So he steps over the feelings and he reaches for the data she's talking about, the logic. And he takes pride in noticing inconsistencies in the way she talks and in finding quick solutions, though she may not be looking for a solution. And he may argue just for intellectual stimulation, thinking that would be fun for her too. And he seeks to be factually right. All this, though, feels like an argument to her. She's doing something different. She's seeking emotional support.
Right.
So unknowingly, he cuts her off from the sharing that she was doing, not knowing that she doesn't feel like herself. It's essential for a woman to have the natural expressiveness of talking. It's really important. So she's seeking connection. She's seeking intimate dialogue. She will apologize readily, whether she's right or wrong. She will seek understanding of the point of view of the speaker. She'll sacrifice to make him comfortable. And men benefit from all this. But he uses dialogue to establish facts or to display knowledge. And she's using dialogue for a completely different reason. She's trying to find emotional closeness.
Right. Yeah. Women try to connect more, where men, you know, use language to communicate, you know, more basic things,
yeah.
I think.
And
I think men look to connect maybe more through sex and things like that, whereas for women, you know, men can separate the two.
I also feel like men want to win, regardless of what is being discussed.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, that depends.
And by the way, I'm just a caveat here. You won't experience much of this if you're newly dating. And the reason, it's so interesting, the reason is that Mother Nature gifted men with extra oxytocin during courtship, so that a guy is more like a woman during courtship,
really?
Which of course is deceiving. But Mother Nature intends for us to couple. So, coming down to talk, then, I think there's three things a woman has to remember when she's trying to talk to a male partner. One is that his testosterone makes him efficiency-seeking. So he searches for the bottom line of what she's saying and feels frustrated when he can't find it. And the reason he can't find it is because she's talking about her emotions. But if she'll present the bottom line first and then talk about the emotions, he'll be a lot better off. The second thing is that he doesn't have the experience with emotions that she has. It's menstruation that puts women into the right brain where 412 emotions are. So if she presents with her feelings first, it's like him talking to her about car engines or hunting equipment. And, you know, you can handle that for a while, but you know. And then the third thing is that he's more intrinsically physical than she is. So he wants to know what she wants him to do. He's frustrated unless he can figure that out. And then most guys will do what a woman wants him to do. You know, it's just he's frustrated trying to figure out what that is.
Exactly. And I think that's one thing, is that women, or many women, expect you to read their minds, you know, and know what they're feeling.
Yeah.
And you can't do that without communicating, you know.
Yeah. I think when women understand that they have much higher empathy than men. And empathy is really the diamond of all relationship skills. It includes dropping a person's ego and decentering and coming over to the perspective of the other, inferring what the other is experiencing. And women particularly have a lot of emotional empathy, and they get further doused with it whenever they have a baby, and then they keep it, you know. And it includes the desire to help and feeling sad when somebody's sad and translating cues from a person's nonverbals. And women's brains are 8 times more activated than men's when thinking about something sad. They're really busy with that. So if women feel that acutely and are equipped to sense what others feel, they loathe the thought of inflicting hurtful feelings.
Right.
So then what happens is, because when men and women are talking and he doesn't have the hookup to words and feelings like she does, he will make faux pas. He will say things accidentally, that hurt her. And, you know, he doesn't mean to, but she would never do that to him because of her empathy.
Right.
So she can infer that he doesn't really care about her.
Right.
And honestly, fundamentally, I think that's what most divorces are about.
Yeah, probably. I mean, you know, because,
yeah.
You know, you hear women saying men are jerks and all that stuff. And it's like,
mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, it's not the case. I think it does come down to communication, understanding each other, physiology
and
you know, and the way their mind works, you know, and
mm-hmm.
yeah.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking to Catherine Foster. The book is The Naked Truth About Men and Romance. And where can people find the book, Catherine?
Just go to Amazon or Barnes & Noble. It's on there.
Sounds great. Well, so do you have a website as well where people can get some more information?
I sure do. It's just my name, Catherine, K-A-T-H-R-Y-N, Foster, F-O-S-T-E-R, PhD.com. And you can contact me through that. I was going to say one other thing, and that is to help couples. I've written a book called What Women Want Really, and
uh-huh.
that it's written to men. It's written in a bullet-pointed, concise way, but it's meant for men and women to sit down and talk out together. It defines
genius. I want to gift that to everybody right now.
thank you. Great.
Yeah. Well, Catherine, this is fascinating stuff. Obviously, you know what you're talking about, and this is refreshing. And I hope people come away with this understanding each other a little bit better. And, you know, maybe...
That would be great.
Yeah, maybe saving some marriages and relationships that...
Absolutely.
Yeah. All right, Catherine, well, all the best to you. And
Thank you so much.
Of course, much success with the books. And all the best again.
Okay, thanks so much.
Thank you, Catherine.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Yeah, I like stuff like that. You know,
me
because,
too.
Yeah, makes you think a little bit about what we do and stuff, you know, because God knows, I mean, relationships are not smooth.
Right.
You know?
Well, that's also why there are books like Men Are From Mars, Women Are From Venus that
right.
are written. We're very clearly different. I don't know why anybody expects us to think the same way or do the same things. We're never going to do it.
Right. Exactly. I mean, because we are different. And I think that's the first thing people have to accept is that we are different.
Right.
And we need to learn how to speak to each other.
Exactly. I think communication is the one thing that you can come to common ground on.
Right.
And if you're good at it, you can express yourself in the way that the other person will understand you without it becoming a bigger issue.
Yeah, and you got to practice it before problems start,
yeah.
You know? Because once you get into an argument, forget about it. It's a meltdown, and it's not getting you anywhere. Nobody's hearing anything.
Right.
You know, people are just, like, shouting. And I mean, I'm guilty of that, you know. But if you make a conscious choice, I think, to... you know, to work on how you understand the other sex, then I think it can help quite a bit.
I agree. One of my resolutions this year is to be a better communicator. So
that's true. What about your resolutions? I was going to ask you about them. You had five, right?
No, I have so many. It's like, oh, you have so many at this point.
Yeah, I mean,
absurd.
You're making it impossible for yourself.
No,
I'll
do
so
all.
Many.
I'll totally do them all.
Really?
Oh yeah.
Wow.
I'm really like list oriented. I'm a Capricorn. We've talked about this. Yeah. I'm very good at lists. So give me a list and I'll check everything off.
Wow. See, I need to be able to do that, man. It's like everything is just jumbled in my head. There's no order or organization. I do a million things at once, and it makes me crazy.
Yeah, you got to get some order in your life. It'll make it a lot easier.
Yeah.
And if you break down steps and make them smaller each day and accomplish a little bit each day, then you accomplish it.
I guess it's just because I don't like to have to do things.
Oh, and you're rebellious like that.
When you have a list, it's like, I have to do this. It's not rebellious. It's just I don't like things doing things. I don't like doing things that I have to do. You know, so it's like cleaning the house. I don't like doing that. And right. I don't, you know, I have a maid that does it for me. But, you know, there's other things. I mean, there's a lot of things I don't enjoy doing, but you got to do them.
You got to.
You know, so I think in that case, those lists are indisposable, I think.
Yeah. No, yeah. I mean, I make them all the time. I love lists. I live by lists. Otherwise, really? I won't remember to do things. Or, like, it helps me prioritize, too. So I know what I need to accomplish every day. And right. the things that can move get moved. And then I'll do them, like, another day. And
right.
I feel good about knowing, like, I got what I needed to get done. And then other things, like, you know, I've made a choice about the other things.
It makes sense.
Yeah.
Makes sense, you know, because I know when I've done lists, it does help, you know, because you keep seeing it in front of you. You don't forget, you know, you remember what's important.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I also do that with my calendar. My calendar has everything I'm doing in the day.
Really?
Reminders, everything, every errand, everything.
Wow. You're so friggin' organized. I'm impressed.
Thanks. I love it, though. Not everyone does. That might be too much structure for some people.
Yeah, it is.
For me,
yeah,
it gets me through life.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. You know, some people, you can never make them happy. Did you hear about this billionaire whose ex was not happy with the check of $1 billion?
No, I'll take it. $975
million. They went through a divorce. They were together for 26 years, no prenup. And he offered her $1 billion. Now he's got $20 billion. He's, you know, he's pretty rich, obviously. But you know what I'm thinking? I'm thinking this woman lived with him for that long. She deserves more than $1 billion. If he's got 20.
I mean, I guess, but $1 billion is so much. And what's she going to do in the rest of her life with that money anyway?
No, I know. But you know what? It's let's say it's the principle, you know, because people feel, oh, you know, he's not valuing me right. as much as he should. She said she worked for the company as well as.
I mean, I guess then she should have gotten, what, half? Isn't that how that works?
Half, you know, I mean, yeah, I guess. But, you know, I mean, I'm sure she'd be happy with even a couple billion. But, yeah, I mean, they're saying, look, it was he accomplished it himself and all that. But that's the thing. When you get married to someone and they get used to a lifestyle as well, you know, I mean, to us, it seems like pathetic. But, you know, in court, they say, I've been accustomed to this lifestyle and that's what I'd like to have.
Right.
You know, so but so she finally cashed the check. So I don't know what's going on. But they're showing the picture of the check. You've never seen a check like this before.
I'm sure. It's can't even imagine.
Yeah, the amount is written over two lines.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
You know, when you have to spell out the amount and stuff?
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. But, I mean, it's amazing to me because they published the canceled check with his signature on it.
Does it show the account number?
No, actually, they took out the account number.
Oh, damn it.
But handwriting and everything, you know, I mean, the signature, yeah, who would want that? But, I mean, why would the bank release something like that?
Don't know.
Yeah.
They to even show that it was a real check.
Yeah, maybe.
That this was a real story.
I don't know. Maybe. Who knows? Who knows who released
this? It's a lot of money, man.
Yeah. God, you know. I'd love to come buy some money. What would you do if you got like $100,000 or something? I'm not talking $1 million because that's life changing. But if you got like $100,000 right now, you know, like, I don't know, inheritance or something, gift.
I would put it in the bank and I would pay off my credit, my debt, I mean.
Right. But in the bank, it's like it's not going to make even 1%. You know, so you got to do something else. If you're going to invest it, you got to find something else to do.
I don't know that I'd invest. Maybe I'd invest a little bit, but not a lot, because I have. I would rather just get rid of my debt and then like have like a chunk in the bank. Also, one day I'd like to get married. I'd probably put like a wedding fund somewhere in there.
Right. Yeah. It just it seems crazy to me to keep it at 1% where the inflation is higher than that. So your money loses value. So we'll see. I mean, I've been reading a lot about investment and stuff, and I think I highly recommend Tony Robbins' new book. You know Tony Robbins?
Yeah.
He's that motivator and stuff.
He did
one
on investments?
Yeah, he did a new one now on investment.
Interesting.
And it's very cool because he tells you how most brokers don't have your interest in mind. They have... You know, it's more their interest. So there's a conflict of interest there.
Have you seen The Wolf of Wall Street?
Yeah, I have. Yeah. But he says there are independent advisors that don't sell you anything, you know. So they just take a fee. And so so they don't have a conflict of interest. So they can give you good advice.
They're more like an accountant that manages your money.
Yeah, you know, financial planner, whatever.
Yeah.
But you don't want to go to someone that, you know, he says like 95% of the mutual funds out there underperform the market. You know, so what the hell? You know, what's going on?
Yeah.
And so, you know, you've got to be careful in what you do. And I highly recommend the book if you're going to invest your money in anything.
What is it called?
But it's called, I don't even remember, The 7 Steps to Something. Here, I'll find it out for you. Everybody can find it, I guess. New book. Okay. Master the Game, 7 Simple Steps to Financial Success.
Okay, great.
Master the Game is the name of the
book. I'm going to add that to my list.
Yeah, it's Money, Master the Game. And I've been reading that. And it's good because it's a refreshing look at what's going on, you know, with because I don't know anything about investments and stuff, you know. Never had enough money to consider it. But just, you know, if you do come by some money, be careful with it. And like I said, you know, although in the bank the money is safe, it's not a smart thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
Especially if you have a few hundred thousand dollars. So they're saying, you know, usually you go with an index fund, which all it means is that your portfolio, the stocks you have, is what, like, the Dow Jones is or something. So if the market goes up, yours goes up as well, you know. And they're showing that the market's gone up consistently, you know, over long term. So that's another thing. If you go into stocks and things like that, you got to wait long term. You can't, you know, and that's the thing that would make me crazy because I would check it every 5 minutes.
Right.
And that's not good. You have to leave it there for years, you know. But, I mean, companies, I was reading yesterday, some companies, like in 2014, Apple up 40%, Intel up 40%. I mean, that's a lot. Imagine, if you have 100,000, that would be 140,000 in 1 year.
Yeah.
You know, so you stand to make a lot. And that's how people make money, is by investing, you know. You just have to do it right so you don't lose your money.
Exactly.
But, you know, there's no
kill me.
Yeah. I mean, there's no guarantees and stuff, but yeah, if you're going to save up for a wedding and things like that, yeah, I don't know. I don't know. But yeah, I still need to learn a lot about that stuff, but here are books, you know. You know what my daughter told me yesterday when we went to lunch? She said something cool. She said, I told my friend how smart you are. And I said, oh? She says, yeah, you read so much, you know. And I said, I guess I do. So... books do make you smart.
It's true, and that was nice that you noticed that. Things.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, and my kids are just as smart because they love to read as well,
mm-hmm.
you know. So so they're doing great. I mean, my son showed me his report card from the college that he's going to the university. And wow, man, I'm really impressed.
What is he studying?
There's some tough courses there. He doesn't know yet. I mean, he's like, you know how you go to college, you're not sure of where you want to go,
yeah,
and what you want to do, and you learn new things all the time, so you want to do those new things.
Right.
But he might go into engineering. I mean, that's where he is right now.
That's cool.
Yeah.
I feel like there's money in that.
So, yeah, I mean, you take all these complicated classes. Wow. All right. Well, that's it for today, folks. Stay tuned for the rest of our shows today. We have great shows. Jen, have a great weekend.
Thank you. You too.
And get a lot of rest, and we'll see you all on Monday.
You're listening to Sam in the Morning with Jen, right here on LA Talk Radio.